Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And today I'm going to focus on the period of social cleansing, or at least what we could call one of the first periods of social cleansing in Maoist China in late 1949, just following the Maoist victory in the Chinese Civil War, and the period of time known as the Liberation, though for many Chinese it was far from a liberating time at all. This is interesting because it tells us an awful lot about Maoism and about revolutionary ideas. Now, we have to kind of unpick what seems to be a contradiction here. During this period of time, it was mainly the targets were mainly poor people, vagrants, rickshaw pullers, prostitutes, beggars, pickpockets, the real down and outs who were sent to re-education camps. Why would Mao, who had Marxist-Leninist credentials, wage this war on China's poor? Well, they were essentially the wrong kinds of poor people. The kinds of poor people who, in Mao's view, had been corrupted by capitalism. They had essentially become subsections of capitalism themselves, prostitutes that sold the one resource they had, their own bodies, pickpockets and thieves that broke the law in order to accumulate goods. Normally they were looking to survive. Beggars who sold their belongings. In Mao's view, Mao later famously, when meeting with Khrushchev in China, saw beggars during at the roadside during the Great Famine, and essentially said to Khrushchev, look, there's your problem, you see. Capitalism tends to restart itself whenever it gets the opportunity. Those people are selling belongings in order to accumulate wealth, whereas obviously this is a kind of an absurd notion. The reality is that they were selling their belongings in order to stave off starvation. So for Mao, the kind of the criminalized poor represented something that needed to be forced out of the new society, needed to be almost kind of educated out of the new society, just as the kind of the wealthy capitalist classes needed to be re-educated or liquidated in whatever way was easiest. If one looks at Maoist propaganda posters of the 50s and the 60s, it's clear that there are certain productive classes, the peasants and the workers, the urban poor, the wretched, the beggars, are not there. And the reason why they're not there is because they're not deemed to be productive classes. There's not a particularly good advert for China Anyway, and obviously no country does tend to put beggars on its propaganda material. But the key distinction was between those capable of work, or those willing to work, those willing to engage in the productive task of socialist construction, and those who were deviant, those who were lawless, and those who were really hangovers from the corrupting influences of capitalism. And today we're looking at Frank Decota's excellent book, The Tragedy of Liberation, which, if you want a kind of a general primer for Maoist China, 1945 to about 1957, this is the book to read. So Frank Decota writes, "More vulnerable were classes of people the regime perceived as threats to social order and drains on its resources. They were called lumpen proletariat in Marxist parlance, but parasites and trash by the party cadres who had to deal with them. Paupers, beggars, pickpockets and prostitutes, but also the millions of refugees and the unemployed who'd come to seek shelter in the cities during the Civil War. Many urban residents who craved a return to social order after the chaotic years of civil war welcomed these measures. Some, however, feared that the cities might be emptied." So there would obviously, at the end of the Civil War, have been a widespread desire amongst many urban Chinese, and rural Chinese too, but in this case, many urban Chinese, to see some kind of order restored. Often at the end of civil wars, people aren't picky which side necessarily wins, as long as the chaos of war can somehow be abated. And so the regime set about, with kind of great deliberation, this process of kind of cleansing the cities. Frank Decota continues, "In Beijing, the communist troops charged with taking over the prisons found most of them empty. To save food and heat, the municipal authorities had ordered the large-scale release of inmates a few months earlier. On the streets of the capital, some beggars thought that they were quite literally liberated. They roved the streets, killing dogs, smashing windows, and blackmailing shop owners, with some of them managing to make the equivalent of 8 to 10 kilos of grain a day. Rickshaw pullers, on the other hand, took liberation as a license to flout traffic regulations, causing mayhem on the streets. Thousands of them were rounded up and confined in makeshift camps on the outskirts of the city. By the end of 1949, some 4,600 vagrants languished in re-education centres and government reformatories." Now, the mildly sympathetic view here might be that any party taking power at the end of a civil war would have an equivalent job of simply keeping society under control, of trying to prevent cities from breaking down into chaos. Okay, however, a more critical view would point out the ideological bent of these sorts of arrests, and the language as well. The idea that certain individuals were parasites, certain individuals were non-productive, certain individuals managed to kind of live off the common weal while others had to do the toil. Of course, the vagrants and rickshaw pullers and petty thieves were forced to consider their behaviour, consider their beliefs, and reflect upon their lives. And of course, they were forced to immerse themselves in Marxist, Leninist, Maoist doctrine. Some attempted to use their time in internment camps profitably. Some tried to please their captors and to present themselves as reformed citizens. Others sank into kind of deep despair at what had happened to them. The overarching theme that they were told was that their imprisonment was part of their liberation, that they were being liberated from the ideas that had oppressed them and misguided them all their lives. And the attempt to kind of subvert this sometimes led to the inmates losing their sanity, though this was often viewed as being a kind of a fake cry of mental illness, whereas in reality there were attempts to escape, there were suicide attempts, and in these camps were also children, and one report indicates that one frequent sight was children begging to be allowed to go home and not knowing what was going to happen to them. Some of the peasants, some of the vagrants, I beg your pardon, who wound up in the camps claimed that they were unreformable or beyond reform or refused to be reformed. Although this is what some of the kind of official documentation indicates. However, the reality is on an everyday basis, life in these camps was brutal, hungry, and the abuse of prisoners was rife, Frank Decota writes. In the western suburbs of Beijing, guards stole food and clothing and regularly beat the people they were meant to reform. As a detailed investigation brought to light, some of the children in detention were sexually abused. The nurses could be careless, sometimes even brutal, particularly when using syringes. People died every month, the death rate being especially high among the elderly. So as we've seen in Stalinist Russia, initially when camps become simply dumping grounds for human beings, there is very little incentive to try to even apply, no matter how offensive or misguided the thinking actually is, the supposedly reformist principles are of the camp. And normally, these camps, again, as we've seen with Nazi Germany, become simply employment opportunities for sadists and for those who are profoundly indifferent or have kind of abandoned all pretense of humanity when it comes to others, particularly elderly people and children. In Shanghai, thousands of thieves and vagrants and rickshaw pullers were arrested and sent to labour camps, and in waves, the camps started to become overwhelmed with the numbers of individuals that were being sent to them. For example, in December 1949, in 3 days, more than 5,000 beggars, pickpockets and thieves were sent to re-education camps and to training camps, which were largely the same thing. Those that weren't arrested fled from the streets. So those that might be familiar with rural China, my own experience of growing up in Hong Kong in the 1980s and passing over to China fairly frequently was seeing the street vendor, the hawker, the small cobbler, the peddler, in across kind of rural and urban China, as a kind of a general sort of feature of everyday life, and one only needs to imagine in 1949 how many people who lived in those conditions would have existed. Those that weren't arrested vanish. They leave the streets as quickly as possible. And this process of really kind of eliminating or sending into hiding an entire sort of social class or subclass has some...
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
An important effect on China. Throughout most of the works on Mao's China that you can read, one theme tends to come up. The idea that all facets of urban life and rural life, or kind of Chinese social life in general, become gradually sort of weakened so that there is only one primary relationship in the end, the relationship between individual and state. And by the end of the Cultural Revolution, you can see that at its kind of apogee. But the elimination of street hawkers starts to remove essentially part of the kind of the glue of Chinese life, the part of the kind of the familiarity, part of the sort of the colour of the urban landscape. As Frank Dakota puts it, people who eked out a living as peddlers and hawkers were also cleared from the streets. In Republican China, all manner of goods were delivered to the door, usually in baskets, swung from shoulder poles or carted on wheelbarrows, occasionally in donkey panniers. Each hawker had his own peculiar chant or mechanical rattle to advertise his wares. Vendors and itinerant traders also stood on pavement corners, offering every possible item from local fruit and vegetables, cloth, crockery, baskets, coal, meat, toys, sweets and nuts, to soap, socks, handkerchiefs and towels. And the kind of the elimination of that was about wiping out part of China's past, China's rich and varied culture, for better or worse, and announcing that a new and monolithic culture would be imposed upon China. So not only were these people rounded up and sent back to their home villages, or they did the smart thing and made that journey themselves before the state got its hands on them, a tiny number were allowed to remain, and they were then prevented from wandering and used to fill open-air markets. And so the familiarity of the, you know, the street corner vendor, or the existence of the door-to-door vendor, who many people, perhaps older people in Chinese cities, relied upon, started to vanish and was replaced with these new marketplaces. One in Tianjin was established on a kind of an old tract of wasteland. It was a huge marquee built with bamboo that went up in a couple of days. And very quickly the whole place was walled and roofed and matted. Pictures were marked out and tables were established, and even a fun fair was organised to attract people to visit it. And there was a distinct political purpose behind that. It was about now coordinating commercial activity in one place where it could be observed, monitored, controlled, and it could follow whatever ideological diktats the state wanted. And it was about the process of kind of coordinating the population and stamping out whatever kind of deviant individualisms might exist. And the ending of the street hawker. The same thing happened with brothels. In Beijing, 2,400 police officers raided brothels on November the 21st, 1949. 1,000 women and several hundred owners, procurers and pimps were arrested. And the female sex workers, instead of being treated for any diseases they might have, or being sent back to their homes, or being really helped in any meaningful way, were sent to re-education camps. Many who had come from small peasant villages in the middle of China and were not literate were set to work either learning Chinese, learning to read and write, or those that could read and write were given books on and told to read the evils of feudalism and capitalism, and try to kind of politically educate them in the nature of their exploitation, though it's entirely possible that prostitutes in Beijing understood fully the nature of the exploitation, having lived through that exploitation throughout significant periods in their lives. They were given, they were taught practical trades and sent to vocational training classes. However, they were locked up in re-education camps, and those that filled up, the prostitutes were sent back to decommissioned brothels in towns and cities, often they were forced to denounce their former employers, some of whom they would have had very unpleasant memories of, some perhaps not such unpleasant memories of, who would have been there in struggle sessions, wearing chains and being forced to confess to their crimes. In between October 1949 and January 1950, in Suzhou, Bengbu, Nanjing, Hangzhou, Tianjin, and other cities, prostitution was stamped out. And it was particularly associated with the kind of the dissolute and corrupt nature of the nationalist Kuomintang years. In Shanghai, a more gradual approach was used. Brothels were gradually starved of customers through increasing regulations, banquets, gambling, and rowdy behaviour, and soliciting for customers were all stamped out. And then all contracts between prostitutes and pimps and madams were declared void, so the prostitutes could walk away at any time that they wanted. There was a regulation and licensing of each brothel, and police could invade at any time. And gradually, as each address was closed, the establishment was permanently struck from the list and was never allowed to reopen. And as a warning, gradually, as the campaign against brothels sort of heated up, a few brothel owners were executed, and their names were put on lists in large black writing as a warning to others to leave the profession of pimping, or perhaps not to consider entering it. Many of those who could see which way the wind was blowing decided voluntarily to hand over their premises. They knew that their custom was dying out, and they knew that the risks of remaining in the prostitution business far outweighed the financial rewards. And so what happened to those pimps? A great many of them would return back home to their villages. Some would take up a trade, such as tailoring, or sell cigarettes on the streets, or become manual labourers, or work on the railways. Many of the women who were sent to re-education camps were forced to live as prisoners, effectively, following a harsh penal code. They were, in the eyes of the state, needing to be transformed as individuals, and were seen as being repositories of suspect and alarming ideas. They would spend their time in study sessions, and they would have to denounce not only their pimps, but also the old regime that had placed them in that situation. There were very few former prostitutes were able to really express the kind of contrition that the state was looking for. A number were resentful about being taken away from their work. They had not necessarily chosen to be rescued or liberated in this way, and didn't wish to be re-educated. And a number of them quarrelled or argued with those who were responsible for their re-education. And they did not like being forced to do manual labour, and didn't see it as transformative. They just saw it as back-breaking and menial, and perhaps the sort of thing that they'd seen tried to evade by working in the sex industry. And they were often deeply unhappy being forced to work as seamstresses, sewing uniforms for the People's Liberation Army. The kind of enforced liberation of sex workers here had all sorts of unforeseen consequences. And one could argue that it was not especially being done for the supposed victims of sexual exploitation, but being done for the wider ideological needs of the regime, and a more nuanced approach to helping people to transition from exploitative sex work would look entirely differently, but really expecting that from the Maoist regime in 1949 is a little naive. Overall, what the regime was trying to do was socially cleanse its cities and to eliminate any kind of non-productive, i.e. non-agricultural or non-industrial labour. And this was kind of the setting of the very foundations of Maoism, and many of the events that we will later look at, particularly the 2 5-year plans, the second being the Great Leap Forward, would rest upon these sorts of social changes. Anyway, thank you very much for listening, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Do remember that we support ourselves through a tiny trickle of ad revenue and the generosity of our patrons. If you can pop by the Explaining History Patreon page and give a small donation, we'd be much obliged. Thank you very much. All the best. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.